They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 175. All roads go through Detroit. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ryan McCluskey, and Steve Collins. How are you doing, boys?
I'm great. I'm so much better seeing Steve's face. I'd taken a like a photographic memory, but I'd kind of started to forget what it looked like.
Hey, I'm the one who butters up Steve on this podcast. I'm having this taken up off me. Fine, whatever. You're right, Steve.
I mean, such love. How could I not be all right with such love in the building?
This is the season review show, and we're also going to reveal the award nominations. The awards themselves will be this time next week, one of our best shows of the year, so you're going to need to come back for that one. Just a bit of an intro before we start. As always, don't forget our Discord channel. Really great community of Lions fans there. Come and join us. The offseason's going to be huge for us. 5 picks in the top 80, is it? The draft's going to be absolutely massive, so you'll need to be a part of that. College football podcast, boys, what are you going to be talking about?
It's the Senior Bowl Part 2. We'll be looking at the defensive roster this week, and we'll be looking at special teams as well. So don't worry, Matt, we will do a nice big section for long snappers for you so you can get to replacing Scott Daly in the offseason. So, yeah, that's what we're doing this week.
Poor Scott Daly. He didn't deserve that. Anyway, please don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast on YouTube and Twitch and all of our social channels. Really appreciate that. We're on 770 subscribers right now on YouTube and well on the road to 1,000. So please do help us out with that. Also, don't forget the app at lionsnationunite.com. That is Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. We're there alongside Dose Dion and Micro Mike and Lions on the Prowl. All of the best. So you want to download the app at lionsnationunite.com. We're a Twitch affiliate as well. If you've got an Amazon Prime subscription, you get a free Twitch Prime sub every single month. It's about $2.50 it's worth to that content creator. It might not seem like much, but believe me, it makes all the difference come year end. We've also got a feedback form down below in the YouTube. If you've got something to say to us about ways we can improve, ideas about content, anything you like, please do go and hit that link. Tell us what you think. There's also a tip jar down there if you feel so inclined. All right, time to get on with some news. And it's been a little while, boys, since we were on last. It's weird not having a Thursday show, so there's a little bit to go through. And the first up is a few awards. Week 18, NFC Offensive Player of the Week was Jamal Williams. He went 16 for 72 and 2 tutties. Aiden Hutchinson won Defensive Rookie of the Month. If I remember rightly, that's his second back-to-back, which is just exceptional. 21 tackles, 4 sacks, and 5 tackles for a loss. And also, Khalif Raymond was the only guy in the All-Pro voting from the Lions. He was the NFL's second team All-Pro punt returner. Boys, we're getting accolades left, right, and center. It feels like this has been the most awarded Detroit Lions since maybe I even started being a fan 14 years ago.
I think it is. I think we've had 12 either monthly or weekly winners throughout this season, which ties a very long record. So, yeah. And Aiden's dominated for back-to-back months. Like I said, there's also an interception in there, a forced fumble and a fumble recovery. There wasn't a graphic big enough to list all the stats. That's it. I think Garner will win Defensive Rookie of the Year because he started the season really well and was basically an all-pro, but Hutch has blown him out of the water for the last 6-7 weeks, I think, of the year. He really got hot down the stretch. It's just a shame that most people have made their minds up by now. But yeah, I know the lack of respect is in all, bro. Happy for Khalif Raymond, but even the top centre in the league gets very little recognition. Jackson, so we're just more disrespect thrown our way. So I really hope that next year we teach them all a lesson and have an entire All-Pro roster. But yeah, it was, and for Jamal, it was more about how he did it than what he did, because the numbers themselves actually weren't that impressive. But to go through it, telling everyone that he had lost a vital family member. He was playing with emotion bottled up against his former team. So, yeah, it was about the performance and the mentality. But, yeah, it caps off a great year and the best rookie class I've ever seen. Without a shadow of a doubt, I don't think we've had any. I don't know if there's been a better rookie class in football since, like, 2000.
Yeah, I kind of quite enjoyed our outsider status. I don't really like this plaudits. You know, it is good for the franchise and for the fans, but yeah, after the last like 5 or 6 years of just kind of being in the wilderness, and even when we did like beat a good team, getting absolutely zero credit, it's still happening. Like I've seen. If you look at the Guardian newspapers right up of the NFL week 18, they talk about how the Green Bay Packers collapsed. And there was like literally not a single mention of the Lions. It just said that the Packers collapsed. And it's just that kind of shit that drives me nuts. But it is good to see the players getting awards, but I'm quite comfortable being outside that kind of bubble of media, you know, loving. I think that's, you know, where we are as a franchise. And yeah, the Jamal Williams sound clip was just an awesome moment. The bit of the Jamal Williams interview where he just changes from talking about his granddad. There's like about 3 or 4 seconds. You can see he goes from like crying and then just this rage comes through and he's just like, stop playing us. And that's the best bit, just that turning point. Love it.
Yeah, as I saw with Steve, it's nice to see all the individual awards and that, but you know, we know where these teams are, even if people around the wider NFL media don't. I mean, in Sewell's case, he did get beaten out by a better right tackle for all. I mean, Lane Johnson's just had a magnificent season, so I don't think it's as much of a snub, but we know he's at all pro level already. So we don't need people to know that for us. In terms of other guys getting the awards, I say it's just been consistent all season. You sort of had guys individually doing well. And as a team, we've started doing much better as well. So it finally feels like we're getting our just rewards for good play. But it's just really positive, you know, to see the NFL realizing that Hutch has been great these last few months. He's really, I think, taken on the mantle of this team, taken leadership in that edge room and really led from the front. Jamal deserved it. Like I say, it was more maybe on his season in total, but I mean, 17 touchdowns, breaking Barry's record, and you know, those touchdowns were critical in helping us beat Green Bay. It's not all about fancy yardage, it's about being in those critical situations, being able to convert, and he was able to do that. So I still think he deserved it there. People get too hung up on the stats line sometimes. It's about how they affect the game. So yeah, all right overall, but I'm not too fussed about the snubs elsewhere. Maybe on his season in
total. Someone has got playback in. There we go. That's gone. Great. Right. Let's move it on. Maybe just to talk very briefly about Wildcard Weekend that happened over the past weekend. In fact, there's still a game tonight, of course, as well. And I mean, for me, I was mainly just interested in the Vikings, and that's because
we don't want them to go. So that's our motivation.
And they delivered. They absolutely delivered. Fraudiola did not get it done. And there we go. So, boys, did you enjoy Wildcard Weekend so far? It's been one of the better ones I can remember, actually, to be honest, because we all came into it thinking it was going to be dross, but there were some close games in there.
Been terrific, hasn't it? I think most of them have been quite close. The refs helped the Bills a lot because it seems they want that Bills-Chiefs game. I think it was disappointing how that game ended. But for the Dolphins, they put up a really big fight considering they're away on the road against a really good team, minus their first two quarterbacks. But love the way they played. I think all the others outside of that, the Bengals, the Ravens, they're good. The Ravens are complete and utter frauds and got shown up as such. I'm glad they're out. The Vikings, I mean, Christ, their defense really is bad. This has not been a good season for them. I don't think. If you went neutrally around the division, I think more people would want to be us than them right now, because they're just in mid-purgatory where Kirk Cousins and his contract is just keeping them hindered in their ability to build around him. And he's got a ceiling which is even lower than I first thought. He's keeping them in that mid-range. They're not doing nothing. We'll be above them next year. But well played by the Giants. I think the Giants, I think you've got to respect them a lot more now. That offense looks really good. The defense has come into life. Brian Daboll's just done a magnificent job there, and you've kind of got to say that. So, hey, oh, it's been a wonderful weekend. I literally thoroughly enjoyed every single game so far. And tonight's probably going to be the most boring of them, I think. Just as long as the Cowboys don't win, then it's a nigh-on-perfect weekend.
Yeah, I watched them. I watched every game apart from the Jaguars game, which obviously turned out to be like probably one of the better games. Yeah, I think the problem with like the Bills and the Dolphins is, you know, the Bills have beaten them twice already. And there just wasn't. Because Miami. Did Miami win?
Both games were decided by like 3 points, but Miami beat them.
Okay, but I just never felt that the Bills were in danger. I thought the Vikings-Giants game was really good. I think it's quite interesting how they're using Daniel Jones more smartly, and also Saquon Barkley. They used him really, really well. And, you know, whereas our defense, did we hold him to like 20, 25 yards? He ran, I think, for like 104 yards against the Vikings, but he just pulled their defense apart and ruined like a lot of their coverage. You know, I think we've all said at various points, the Vikings are massive frauds and they're going to get found out by the first half decent team they play in the playoffs. And I don't even think the Giants are that good. They played better than they did against us, but yeah, the Vikings were always going to get shown up. And even though I'm not a massive Tom Brady fan, I hope they absolutely smash Dallas tonight.
Isn't Daniel Jones the most immobile, mobile quarterback ever? It's weird. He looks like he runs in treacle and it looks really clunky, but he's really damn good at it. He is the most immobile, mobile QB ever.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I just think it was a terrific weekend of football for all the down hopes of what it was going to be. You know, it's not worth watching. Maybe there's one close game in there. The Jacksonville game is going to be the only one that's actually competitive. And I love how Miami made a fist of it with a third string quarterback who was undrafted. Like, that's just a good story.
I mean, you see, the Chargers are going to keep Staley, or everyone's saying they are, and it's just like, how can you survive that? How can you survive one last year basically giving it away to Oakland when they were playing for a draw and you both get through, and then screwing up a 27-point lead this year? I get you've had two winning seasons, but that's bad. Those are really, really big mistakes to make. I don't see how he keeps his job, but it seems he's going to.
I don't hate him keeping his job. I was kind of resigned to the fact that he was going to go. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
you can. Okay, cool. So I think he's shown enough to say that there's something about him and he's on a learning curve. And I think with him, you're in that sort of weird position where you're going into year three, and we have Patricia going into year three. And I was amongst the people saying, I think we need to see this project to the end, like one more season, even though it's probably going to suck. And I feel much better about Staley than I do about Patricia. Like, I feel like Staley's biggest problems are his choice of coordinators rather than his own head coachship. He needs help with personnel.
Oh, no.
Anyway,
I mean, Herbert's going to be off his rookie deal soon, so they're going to be screwed with this all-in approach if they don't win quickly. You've got to make a decision really soon about it.
It's true. Right, let's crack on with the rest of this. Lions getting interest in their coordinators for head coaching positions. Ben Johnson has been interviewed by the Colts, Texans, and Panthers, and is regarded as the favorite for the job at the Panthers right now. The odds say he has about a 20% chance or so, which is the highest of any of them. If you believe some rumors out there, David Tepper is absolutely enamored with him, but there's a lot of candidates, so we'll see what happens with that. Aaron Glenn also got interviewed by the Colts boys. I know you were saying we weren't worried about it, and you put a very eloquent post on our channel on Twitter about not being that worried about it. But now the number of people interviewing him has come out. Are we worried about Ben Johnson going a smidge?
Nope. I've accepted Ben Johnson's leaving. That's fine. I'm cool with it. They'll just promote someone from within. And Glenn, I don't give a shit if Glenn goes. Kelvin Shepherd will just step right into his job. I don't think it'll even be I think it'll be a seamless transition. I don't think they'll even have to argue about it. But no, I've accepted Johnson's leaving. He's a Carolina kid, went to UNC. Like I said, he bleeds basically like Tar Heel. Like I says, I reckon he's the perfect. The only person that can screw that up is Sean Payton, who is planning to meet with Carolina this week. But they're going to want at least a first and a second rounder. So they'll see if they want to stump that up. But yeah, I reckon Ben Johnson's leaving. And I wish him all the best. If he stays, fine. If he goes, it is what it is. I'm not getting attached to anyone anymore. That it just is fool's gold getting attached to anyone.
Well, successful franchises lose coaches. We want to be a successful franchise. You're going to lose your coaches. But I can't help but feel that Carolina are about to make a massive mistake if they do this. I mean, you know, guys like Shanahan and McVay have broken the coaching system in terms of everyone thinks that they get a hotshot young offensive coordinator. They're going to be the next 49ers. They're going to be the next Rams. But it's not always the case where that translates over. Don't forget, Ben Johnson has 1 year experience in the business. He's never been to the postseason. You know, it's been good at times, and then there's other times when the offense has just fallen to bits without its main playmakers. I'd argue our offense is a lot better here. There's a massive difference between coaching an offense which is under no expectation whatsoever since he's been here to going to a team where you have to manage everything. You know, you're not going to be the guy necessarily making the play calls, which you've been renowned for, or if you're going to do that, you know, you've got a hell of a job on your hands then. You're getting coordinators interviewed for you. They're not going to be yours. And if it is someone like Vic Fangio on defense, how are you going to cope with having a guy who's been a head coach right underneath you in the system? Are you going to enjoy that? Are they going to be able to work together? I do not know. But I think this premium that seems to have gone on at young hotshot offensive coordinator is going to be a lot of teams' ruin. I think the Panthers need a steady hand at the minute. They're in a division which they're going to be expected to win because it's rubbish. And they're probably one of the better teams in it at this moment in time, who've just been held back by a bad coach. So if they want to do it, fine. I don't really care. As I said on Twitter, it's a case of if this rebuild cannot survive the loss of one offensive coordinator, then it's not legit. Brad Holmes and Dak Campbell are not legit. Good franchises, you know, get rid of these losses. Think how many coordinators San Fran have lost in a few years. They've lost Salah, probably about to lose D'Amico Ryans. Lose staff every season. They have a system in place where it's next man up, ready to go, and on you go with them. And hopefully the Lions have got ready. Maybe we've not had the amount of time we want. If it is going to be Tanner, maybe one more year would be good. But at the end of the day, you still have to legislate for it. So good luck, Ben, if you go. I can't help but feel the Panthers are going to make a massive mistake with this. But business as usual for us.
So how many jobs has Ben Johnson interviewed for?
Three.
So the Panthers, Colts,
Texans.
I mean, who would want to go to the Texans? I mean, just a mess of a franchise. I think the Panthers, there's definite rumors that like Sean Payton, that could be like his destination, because he's a shrewd enough guy to see that out of all the rosters, the Panthers is the best roster of those teams. Without, you know, he's not going to want to go to the Broncos and work with Russell Wilson. And I mean, does Ben Johnson want to go and work for Jim Irsay at the Colts? I mean, like, this is a franchise at the Colts where they've single-handedly destroyed Andrew Luck by, you know, not giving him an offensive line. And Irsay is one of the most interfering owners. So I don't know. Would he really want to go there, even for a head coaching job?
Yeah, it's a fair point. And obviously, we may have more on that in the next week or so. So we'll update you as we go. Let's crack on with the season review. And let me take you back to early September in the start of the season when we all thought, I wonder how we're going to do. And let's have a look back to the Roar of the Lions prediction sheet. let me run down what the predictions were for everyone. Ant had an 8-9 season. Ryan Farden had a 7-10 season. Ryan McCluskey, 8-8-1. Steve had 8-9. Tom had 6-11. Martin had 7-10. And I had 10-7. So the closest person in terms of pure record, Ryan McCluskey coming out with a pure 500 record is the closest. The next closest being one away, either up or down, were Ant, Ryan with eight, Ant, Ryan and Steve with 8, and myself with 10, and then Martin with 7, Ryan Farben with 7, and Tom with 6. But we did have a point system as well. It was 2 points if you get the correct result in each game, 1 extra point if you are the person with the closest point differential and you got to the game score correctly. So no calling a loss by 1 point and you're close because we won by 1 point. That doesn't work. And if you get the exact right score differential and the game results, you get an extra 3 points. The person who came out on top of that was also Ryan McCluskey. He nicked it on the final day. Final day, 31 points from me on 29. I'm absolutely gutted. We both went into the final week. I had 29 to your 28, and you picked the Lions to beat the Packers. You were the only person to pick Lions over Packers in preseason week 18, and that got you the dub.
Keep the faith. I told you. Right. Never in doubt.
What's really important here is the people bringing up the rear, because the agreement was that it was a round of drinks at the next meetup, which would be the first meetup, because we've still not all met each other in person, despite doing this for 2.5 bloody years. And the people bringing up the rear this year are the last year's winner, I think, in Ryan Farden with 20 points, joint along with Tom Wilkins. So those people will either be sharing or buying a round each at the Roar of the Lions meetup. Rest of the guys, we had Steve in third, Martin in fourth, and Ant in fifth. So those are your prediction scores there for the Roar of the Lions. So on average, we had a record of 7-10, which I think was roughly about average for the rest of the podcasty type folks, unless you were really high on the Lions. Obviously, we finished 9-8. But if I take you back, this schedule was regarded to be in the top 5 easiest schedules in the NFL. But when it's all said and done, this is ranked at the 16th hardest schedule in the NFL. So this is bang average hardness, and it was meant to be third or second easiest. So the difference in expectations and reality, and the fact that we outperformed what we thought we were going to do despite the easy schedule, tells you how good of a season this has been for Detroit. So let me take you all the way back then. We started 1-6, and I'm just going to break this into the first 3 games because I think it's really important to the context of the season. Started off against Philadelphia at home, losing 38-35. Lions were always chasing in this one, down 24-14 at the half, 17 points down at the start of the fourth, but they brought it back late, and Philadelphia had the ball 3 points up with 3.5 minutes to play, and Lions had chances to get off the field. End up not doing that, lose the game. Then against Washington at home again, they got 22-0 at the half and then let them all the way back in. Wentz almost drove them for a victory, but the Lions just get over the line to go 1-1. And then against Minnesota, in Minnesota, we had them absolutely buried, 24-14 at the start of the fourth quarter, with the Vikings going absolutely nowhere. And the Lions crumbled and conceded a touchdown in the final 30 seconds of the game to fall to 1-2. It really felt like, to me, if we'd won that Minnesota game, that momentum really could have ramped up. And unfortunately, in the manner of defeat, I think it really was a hammer blow to us early on, boys.
Oh, yeah. Defense was horrendous. What is it? For the whole 1-6 stretch, defense was absolutely pawny. Like I said, the offense, time and time again, put us in a lead or showed the willingness to come back and make it a contest late on by moving the ball down the field. Swift was healthy. He was running well. Jamal was good in the red zone. Like I say, the weapons, even though we had injuries, like I say, Amon-Ra started the season well. And yeah, that Minnesota game, It hurt. When KG Osborne goes in for that touchdown, I shed a little tear because, like I said, that was such a sucker punch to the gut. That felt like a statement straight away because the NFC North schedule came pretty quickly. I wanted to make a statement in division and we were left reeling. But yeah, three hard games to start the year with. If we'd have come out of that 2-1, I'd have been absolutely delighted. Like I said, we played well enough to be 2-1, but down the stretch and on defence, let ourselves down. But yeah, I expected it. I expected us to start slow because the defence, and we played a lot of rookies. I think this year, what did we do? Like the fourth or fifth team that had took the most defensive rookie snaps. So it was a year of trial and error. A lot of kids out there.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure I felt there was any momentum after the Washington game because, as Ryan said, the defense was so bad, like so, so bad. And even in that Commanders game where we won, I think the third quarter of the Commanders game was one of the most awful 15 minutes of defense we played all season. We made Carson Wentz look like, you know, prime Brett Favre for, like, you know, 15 minutes. It was just appalling. And there was so much frustration because the offense was so lively and you always felt that someone was going to make a play in a good way, but then the defense would come on the field and just suck the energy out. So I just felt like really, even winning that Commanders game, I felt kind of hollow because I was just so frustrated that we had made no improvement. In fact, it was almost, I don't want to exaggerate, but it felt like we were worse than the previous year. And the previous year was fucking terrible.
I think now you look back on it all as a whole, I think this is kind of what you maybe have to expect this year. As Ryan said, you're coming into a year, your team is incredibly young. Don't forget, at this point, you're very injured. You know, Jameson's not there, Pascal's not there, you know, Levi's already off, Howell's injured. You've got a lot of injuries and a lot of inexperience and youth in that team. And you kind of saw a crossover from last year. I mean, you can see the team the same. So you play Philadelphia hard. I know you get down early, but you're not out of it. You play them hard. You end up only just losing. You know, Washington, you beat them, which is a decent sign. So they're a rubbish team. You're at home. You need to take advantage of that. That's fine. You're sort of showing a little bit of growth there. And then afterwards, you got Minnesota and you got Seattle. And you're just, that's an experience there. Minnesota, obviously, it's heartbreaking. But that's what happens with a young team when they're trying to close out games, when they're under pressure. It's a hard learning curve to be able to get over the hump from that one. So I think that's kind of what you expect from a young side. It's they look good in parts, but they're just trying to find that way to win games. They're just trying to find that way to get that little bit of a killer edge about them. And they obviously just didn't have it to the start of this year. And the belief probably wasn't quite there either, especially when you lose in such a heartbreaking manner to the Vikings. It's grim, but to be expected, I think. I don't have any worries about it being a continuing problem going forward. Year one was, we were just flat out awful at the start of a rebuild. You start slow, of course you do. And year two is you're going through the growing pains of going through the draft and going young. Very few veterans on the side. It's what you sign up for when you build a team this way. So I think going into year three, they're a lot more experienced. We've seen what they've done in terms of how they've grown. So I'll figure it's been a problem going forward.
Just as a quick bit of news that's dropped, Dan Campbell is going to be a guest on the Manning Cast tonight if you are watching the game. I think that is going to be interesting. I think the Mannings with him is going to be quite good TV. Anyway, moving on to the next part of this schedule, and we go from 1-2 to 1-6. A loss at home against Seattle, 48-45. The Lions never led in the game. They were always chasing. They managed to score 22 points in the fourth quarter and still not win this game. Follow that up with a loss at New England 29-0, which is such an odd game to go back and look at because in no way were the Lions blown away in that game. Like, it's a really bizarre game. There was one offensive touchdown. There was the strip six. There was the fourth down madness and Ramondre Stevenson. But if you have a look at the stats, there's no reason why we should be 29 points down in that game. But we were, and it looked bad enough. And then followed that was the bye, a loss against Dallas, 24-6. The Lions led 6-3 at the half and then conceded 21 points in the second half without reply. Kirby Joseph saved the Lions in that first half with a forced fumble near the goal line, if you remember that. It seems like a long time ago now. But the Goff interceptions and a Jamal fumble at the one-yard line of Dallas really killed us there. And finishing up the losing stretch with a loss versus Miami, 31-27. The Lions again led 27-17 at halftime, but again go scoreless in the second half. It's a sad tale, fellas. You know, the Seattle game aside, the New England game is a real misnomer, but scoring was a trouble. Scoring was a trouble against Dallas. Didn't score in the second half. Didn't score in the second half against Miami. And for all the Lions' offense being great in those first four games, it started to feel like the wheels were coming off a little bit.
I said it after the Minnesota game. I firmly believe that game broke them in a way because of how they lost it. It was the first real test of whether they could close out a game in a pressure situation with a lot on the line, and they didn't. And then you saw in the next game, the defense just did not come to play. The offense looked great against Seattle, but you put up 45 points and you still can't win a game. You know, you're going to have issues there. And then you lose your two big playmakers. You lose Swift, you lose St. Brown, you're not with either of them for those two blowout games. And so if everything comes to a crescendo, then your defense is playing bad and has no confidence that it can make a stop. Your offense is missing its two big playmakers, and you know it's on the field very little. You know, your defense is knackered, you can't put up points, you get blown out. Everything just seemed like the confidence took such a hit out of that. And yeah, I think it's all down to the Minnesota game personally. Then Dan Campbell has to, this is where they say his good skill is being able to get them to stick with him, and even in the hardest of times. And even then, in sort of the Miami game, I think it really kicked in after that Dallas game where they really had their ass handed to them. I think it kicked in the Miami game where they're like, right, you know, we've got to fight our way out of this. And you saw in the first half, they were really damn good. You kind of saw the belief start to come back again and that maybe it wasn't all over. And then you are plagued by the inconsistency that stops you. But the defense did all right. It held out for a full half, just giving up 14 points against that offense with all its players healthy. You can kind of see the shoots of recovery then. They'd had the big hit. It had knocked them down, and then you can slowly see them start to build it up again. At this point, all they need is a win just to be able to kick that belief back that they can actually do it. Well, young teams will go through these stretches. They rely a lot on belief. They rely a lot on, we can actually do this. You know, your emotions, your temperament, they go a lot on where you win or lose games. That's what a young team does. So you could tell it was there. You were just waiting for them to be able to put it together enough, though, get that confidence back.
Well, as we were thinking about the season just gone, I've been through my Twitter feed and what I've tweeted during the season, and I'm just going to take us back to week 5 at New England, where I tweeted, first appearance of Jim Caldwell nostalgia in Detroit Lions chat threads, and it's only week 5. This is not a drill. And that's kind of how I felt at that time.
By far the worst 3-game stretch of this season and last year. Like I say, Seattle absolutely gashed by an offensive line with two rookie tackles making their third and fourth starts, a rookie running back, a Geno Smith that everyone's not even sure yet is making a renaissance. And then we dumped 22 garbage points in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, a game we were never really in until it looked good on the scoreline. Yeah. And then Patriots, like the Bailey Zappi show, just dinking and dunking against a good offensive line. Like I say, they have a good defense. Like I say, they had Judon and Uche, who caused havoc. We saw the frailties of Goff turning the ball over. And yeah, I say with the injuries, that was just damage limitation. We knew we were losing. It was just going to be how many by and how healthy can we scrape out of this game. So those two were disasters on different ends of the scale. We just didn't have the firepower to compete with Dallas. Like I say, we started well, but in the end, it just ground us down and we just could not match up them. And then a little bit of a bounce back being Miami. Like I said, he still had success with like Waddle and Hill, because you always do, and Gizicki, because tight ends are just our kryptonite as always. But on the offense, got things going, but blew the lead, as you say again, a team that is so wet behind the ears, a little bit naive, it just doesn't know how to finish out games. And then from then on, it kind of clicked. Like I said, we could build leads, we could score points on good teams, but we didn't know how, when it came into these pressure scenarios, critical downs, just how to keep them out. So it was
that Dolphins game, Ryan, that was, for me, that was my low point, because the defense was so bad. And do you remember the Dolphins had the ball on our goal line? I think they had like half a yard to go to the goal line. They lined up on our half yard line, and one of our defensive backs lined up like on the 1 yard line.
That was Amani.
And I was like, this is the most brainless fucking defense. This is, I was just like, how the fuck? What is going on in practice that like this guy cannot line up in line with our actual goal line? And for me, I just remember being like absolutely fuming mad and just thinking, you know, like there's no progress being made if they're doing this kind of shit. This is an absolute clown show. And for me, that was, that Dolphins game was the low moment, because I'm like, this is so basic. Come on, guys.
We should have beaten Miami. Hands down, we should have beaten Miami. Like I said, a healthy lead. We had a team that was, like I said, they were reeling. The defense and the offense were playing complementary football. But yeah, they lost all their energy. They came out flat at the half, and they never were able to recapture it. And
if I remember rightly as well, this was Tua coming off his first concussion. So he'd had a few games out. There was a debate as to whether he was going to make the game at all. He did. And Hill and Waddle had that 10 or 15 yard pass that we just couldn't stop. And yet somehow we were 10 points up. And it's like, it's written in the clouds. We're just going to win this game. And then just fallen flat. It was shite.
It's funny that Steve mentioned like stuff we tweeted at the time. I've not checked, but I'm pretty sure that is about the time when I lost my rag as well. And I said that I've not felt so dead inside since the end of like the dying embers of Matt Patricia's reign, when you knew it was over. I think at 1-6, it's like, and I said it at the time, it's not because I'm angry at Campbell or Holmes. It's just, I so desperately wanted them to succeed because I like them so much. And I believe that they are, in my heart of heart, the right choice for here. And then you're sitting at 1-6 in your second year, the same old Lions Brigade are out in full force. You know, you get rapped for having an opinion that's anything other than fire them both into space and stuff like that. And it was like, I did feel a little dead inside, especially after that Miami game where, like you said, no points in the second half. And you're just like Christ on a bike. What's going on here? It's, you can see it. And the most frustrating part is you could see that in spurts, they were really good. I mean, take the Patriots game and that. The defense was actually really good against the Patriots. You know, I'm not forgetting that at all, to be able to, you know, for as long as it was on the field, and I'm pretty sure it was on for like nearly 40 minutes or something like that, it didn't give up much. And you could see the youngsters working their ass off, trying to keep us in the game. And the defense just, the offense just couldn't go and even string just like a first down on the field. And it's just coming off again. You're putting them back on. Hell, even against the Cowboys and all that, they played relatively well. In that period where things go dead on the offense, if they sort of keep their Seahawks momentum about, when we win those Patriots and Cowboys games because of how the defense is playing, because one, it's a lot less tired, and two, we can put up more points than they did on us.
Completely agree. The Pats game, one offensive touchdown, which was a good touchdown, but otherwise the strip six and five field goals. We held them to five field goals. They didn't convert for touchdowns pretty much ever. Like, if we'd put field goals on them instead of taking bad fourth and eights that we shouldn't have had, we'd have been right in that game.
Exactly. And that, I think that's the frustrating thing, because it was like at that time, you kind of just a little bit got the feeling like, right, I feel like this is a team that is going to work its nuts off for us and give us 150%, but it just ain't got the consistency or the killer instinct to go out and win games. And at this point, people are saying tank, number one pick. I mean, I think me and Ryan were doing the half-season mock on the college show at this point, and we were pretty sure we were number one at this stage. And it's like, no, the message was always the same, especially with me. It's like, the team's got to learn how to win. if it wants to take the next step forward, they ain't going to learn nothing by losing all the time. And that's what you get when they're losing and their confidence is battered. You lose all those games, whether it's the offense doesn't show up, the defense doesn't show up, the last minute jamming field goal or whatever. You find all manner of way to lose games if your players don't have the confidence to go forward. And it was just, at this point, it's waiting for a win, because if one doesn't come, you're in a lot of bother. But individually, you could see the young core building, which was the good thing, but it was, could it take the next step?
And it's that consistency you talk about. There was just no cohesion between the offense and defense in terms of when they were turning up. And, you know, defense was so bad, then the offense would flicker and then the defense would crumble or the defense would make a stand. And again, I'm looking back at some tweets. The Dallas game in the second half, our offense went interception, punt, fumble, interception, fumble, fumble, you know, and I think the defense was relatively good that game. And it's just so frustrating when the two halves just don't gel and you just get this kind of like chaotic mess. And you know, you were talking about low moments. Like at that point in the season, I felt about as low as I did when they traded Golden Tate and I knew it was over that season. That was the low.
I was ready to fire Goff out of a cannon. I was ready to thank him for his services and say, well, we got the trade. Like, here's to Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. Like I said, I was the games, like the offense, that 3 game stretch, I'm like, oh, well, you fooled me into thinking you're going to be here in 2023. I bought in. And now, weeks like 3 to 7, you're like, dog shit. You've turned the ball over again. You've gone back to being bloody Mr. Bumble and then turning the ball over. And I'm just like, right now, if I died, like the coroner would probably have to put Bradford City and Detroit Lions as like cause of death, because just right now I'm just ready to end it all.
And yet it all turned around, and it turned around in a bit of a hurry with a couple of in-division statement wins. We go 8-2 down the stretch. I'll give you the next 5 as the third quarter of the season. A win at home against Green Bay, 15-9. Detroit lead 8-0 at the half. Don't give up a touchdown all game, and big stands late. 3 Aaron Rodgers interceptions, but don't forget that he had a chance on 4th and 10 in the last play of the game to win it, and we held. And then we beat Chicago by a point, 31-30 in Chicago. Lions with a huge fourth quarter comeback. They were down 24-10 and scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, including the Okuda pick 6. And then next comes just a 3-game stretch, which was super impressive. Win against the Giants, 31-18. Lions dominated the game in New Jersey. Led 24-6 at one point, holding Saquon to 15 rushes for 22 yards. Then a loss to Buffalo in a game that maybe we should have won. The Lions tied it up with 23 seconds left, but still managed to lose. Gritty, edgy game. The Lions led just after the start of the fourth quarter, 22-19. Then the most complete performance of the year, potentially, against Jacksonville at home, 40-14. Impressive performance, domination from start to finish, stingy defense, and we forced an early fumble from Travis Etienne, and they just never looked back. And finally, no, is that 5? That's 5. I'll stop there. That's a really impressive run of 3 games. Beating the Giants, beating Jacksonville, and losing to Buffalo, but looking like a team that suddenly is possessed with winning mantra.
You just need to make one alteration there. We did give up a touchdown to Green Bay in the first one. It was a touchdown and a safety.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes. Did we?
So, yes, we did.
Oh,
it was a touchdown and a safety in the first game.
My bad. I read it wrong.
Oh, no.
Sorry, nothing better to ignite your season than a bit of FTP.
At 1-6, I remember saying to Lorraine, like, are you sure you want to go to this game? Like, are you sure we don't just want to sell the tickets, not have a house under us to buy the Giants? Like, it's a long way to go. I was like, oh, I'm not feeling too good about this, because right now New York looked good. And then, yeah, the trials by fire, that's how I'd put the Packers and the Bears games. Like, didn't play particularly well at points, but in the fourth quarter, came up good. Justin Fields absolutely destroyed us. Like I say, he did what he did, but everyone else let him down. And then we finally saw Hutch come alive with a pick on Rodgers. finally show the splash players, like say we're good in the red zone. And then, yeah, and then going to New York, I was like, oh, back of two wins. I'm like, do you know what? We can do this. Like, we can cause the upset now. Like, I had this wash of emotion over me. And then watching the game live, I was like, well, this is Stagwell. Like, say, and he throws the pick to Kirby, and I'm hooting and hollering. And then, like, say, we run up, we're looking good at the half. The Giants don't look good, even in the home stadium. Their fans are really turning on them. And I thought, like, we're causing a shock here. We've come into a cold weather game. Like, say, we're causing an upset to a team that I believe was like 6-2 or 7-2 at the time. They were really high behind the crest of a wave. And then we just keep piling on the misery, keep taking the ball away. Next minute, we're telling the Giants fans, we can see you leaving. They're in their straws. We're starting to milk it, getting better bench. Like, that, I'd say, was one of the best things I've ever seen. Like I said, I did not anticipate winning, and definitely not in that fashion. Controlled the entire game and thoroughly deserved it. So, yeah. And just like that, the back of three wins, and then took the best team in the league all the way to the end. Like I said, probably should have beaten Buffalo, but I wasn't too sad about the loss, because it really showed me that we've come a long way in such a time. So, yeah, like I say, three wins, a loss. But that stretch of four games, and suddenly the ship is sinking, but it's now suddenly afloat. Like I say, the holes are being patched in the hull, that they're raising the sail, and we can see land, and let's set course. And I felt so much better. I said, Malcolm, Kirby, Hutchinson, guys like Pascal, guys like are getting fit. DJ Chark, like I say, before he gets hurt, but he's starting to get in the mix as well in the middle of the season before he picks up injuries. Jamal takes over with the Swift by now is pretty banged up. Like I say, he didn't go much in that stretch, but yeah, Jamal's taken over. Justin Jackson's been picked up. Offensive line is good to go, like I say, and we're getting healthy. And teams right now are very wary of Detroit. They're like, this aren't the same team that were playing a month ago where we expected to win. Now they're finally putting together back-to-back good half. And not so, yeah. Complimentary football right now is flowing through our veins, and it's a good time to be a Detroit fan.
So, this is where you see the evolution of your team, it's where it goes from potential to legitimacy. And all it needs is one win to spark it. And you know, we've said with the previous sections, the team's fighting hard. That's never been in doubt since Dan Campbell came here, but there was always going to be a point where it had to start winning to back up that fight and that potential they have. And, you know, you come in, you're 1-6, you're playing the Packers, who we've just struggled against for years in the season when it means something. To win such a gritty game, it may not have been pretty, it may have been one of the ugliest games we've ever seen, but what happens is they fought really hard and they won. That win is probably the catalyst for the, you know, maybe everything that comes after this, because what comes with it is a bit of belief. One, you're winning against, you know, the guys who've been the powerhouse of the conference the last few years. You've beaten them at home. You've come from behind to do it, because I don't think we were 9-3 down in that one at one point. And it looked like they were going to, you know, we had some very critical stops on defense, which got us back into it, but could have easily gone another way. And then after that, you sort of start to see the team believing again. Obviously, the Bears the week after, I would have like jettisoned something out of a cannon if we'd lost that one because of how bad they are. But we still struggle with the mobile quarterback play. The defense has still, you know, been built and we struggled with it. But at the end of the day, then, like I say, the belief came back. We got the touchdown. Then the defensive line came to life, forced Fields into that awful throw, which Okuda pick sixes, you know, just when you need it, the defense comes up, makes a play, the offense comes out, plays complimentary, gets us in front, and the defense sees it out for us. It's like, hey, here we go, the belief's coming. And yes, it's only a 1-point win over the Bears, it doesn't matter. It's finding ways to win with your team. You fought out a gritty victory against the Packers. You came from way behind against the Bears. Winning from behind has been our Achilles heel for years. It's been valiant defeats, never quite getting there. Then you get over the hump with this, and then two wins in a row. And they say, we go to New York. Ryan's there to watch it. All of a sudden, you've got belief in your team that you can go out there and do it. You're starting to play football the way you want to. You're playing smash mouth. You're running it through your trenches. We go there and beat the seven bells out of the Giants. And you saw yesterday against the Vikings, they have not got bad lines. They have got good lines, defensively and offensively. They are pretty good. And we went there, wrecked them, run the ball down their throat. Goff's playing well. You get that sort of a dominant win that you want to see. So you've seen the gritty win. You've seen the come from behind win. You've seen the dominant win. You've seen the team figuring out ways how to do it. Then the Bills come. And again, big turning point of the season here. We maybe should have taken them to overtime. Maybe should have won that game. Who knows? It was like the Vikings game in which I felt we gave that game up when we should have won. And if you remember back to what happens after the Vikings game, team goes in its shell and goes shot. You know, the mentality, the belief, everything goes. How do they respond to that Buffalo win? We all said that Jacksonville game was really big to see the mentality of the team and how they were going to do. And the way they came out and took all that anger and frustration at not beating the Bills and just laid it all on the Jags and again, absolutely whipped a very good team at home, it just shows you then the mentality is there as well. So you've seen they've got the ways to win and then you've seen that they're capable of bouncing back from defeat. And that is how you've seen the team building right in front of your face. You've gone from this team that's going nowhere, that's lacking direction, to finally having the belief and confidence in itself that it can go out and do it. And of course, this stretch, massive, massive turning point for this team. Because as we've seen right now, there is no more confident a team in the league than us because we finally started winning games. And this was the catalyst for it all. And I was just very happy with how well they fought to get those wins and how they recovered from that devastating Buffalo loss and just carried on winning again.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this was a great stretch, but for me, I think one the thing I'm most proud of this season is that 5-1 divisional record. And you really saw the catalyst, as Ant said, it was that Green Bay win, that Bears win, like back-to-back, because first of all, I think for the players, it must have been immense, like beating Green Bay. But I think for the fan base, just enjoying that win over like the absolutely hated Packers and then just seeing the meltdown after the game and Packers fans saying Matt LaFleur should be sacked and all that kind of stuff. I think it made us realize like how glad we were that we weren't in the Packers shoes, because like the Packers is a franchise that is in massive decline. And, you know, all of a sudden it felt like our respective graphs were, we were like going in opposite directions. And even though we were like 3-13-1 last season and we were still got a losing record, that we were on the way up. And then, you know, playing against the Bears, Justin Fields absolutely like causing mayhem in our defense. And then we got to that point, I think we were 7 points down at the start of the fourth quarter. And we pressure Fields, he puts the ball up, and out of nowhere comes Jeff Okuda, and he runs in a pick six. Like, for me, that was such a moment, because Okuda was like one of the players that symbolized, you know, the kind of mess we were in, you know, the taking him at number three, and then it just not working out, and him getting injured, and, you know, absolutely love Jeff Okuda to bits, but just like him and taking him that high and then seeing that pick just like disappear in terms of productivity and being a game changer. And Okuda was in the wilderness, and I could not have been more pleased that it was him that came and made that pick and pick six on Fields. It was just beautiful. And that was one of my favorite moments of the season.
Hard to believe that was only 9 games ago. Like, it's only half a season ago, and I know Jeff has been benched twice since then. I still have hope for him, but nine games ago, we were all feeling super high on how he rebounded this year. It wasn't that long ago. Last 5 games for me to just run down for you guys, and 3 divisional games in this stretch. Win at home against Minnesota, 34-23. That's when everyone knew they really were frauds, and it wasn't just me saying it. Lions dominate in run D and run O. Win because of mistakes forced by Dalvin Cook and Hockenson fumbling the ball. Win at the Jets 2-0 in New Jersey, 20-17. Unconvincing game, was down late, had to win it on a 4th-and-1 to Brock Wright for 51 yards with under 2 minutes left in the game. We scored too early. But then we go and lose against Carolina to basically ice the season. 37-23 loss. Lions run D lays an egg. Gives up stadium record in rushing yards. It was horrific. But then final two games to give us a chance, beating Chicago at home 41-10. And the Lions went down 7-0 and then went 41-3. Did not relent all game and finished it off, as we talked about it in our last episode, win against the Packers. It doesn't get old. Extinguishing their chances, putting the hammer down maybe on Aaron Rodgers' NFL career. Who knows? What a stretch to finish off 4-1, 3-0 in the division in that stretch. The Jets game was unconvincing. The Carolina game was awful. But wins against Minnesota, Chicago, and Green Bay. It doesn't get much better than that. You take it all day.
Sorry, Rafa.
Yeah, we won the game. For me, we won the games that I cared about. Like I say, the playoffs for me was always like, well, if it happens, it's great. If it doesn't, well, I didn't expect it. Like I say, so the Carolina loss was horrendous. Like I say, just destroyed by, like I say, a running back that last year was probably bouncing around practice squads. Like I say, by a team that just was kind of like bish bash bosh bodged together, like you say, and that's where the season ended. Like you say, that all our destiny, everything in our own hands, ended there and then. Which, right, Joe, was fine. Like you say, like it was a blip. Like you say, Minnesota, like we derailed that year because Dalvin Cook was never the same after we dislocated his shoulder. The week after he had to play in that brace, he never looked right again this season, I didn't think. Like you say, we've gone on a stretch this year of stopping some elite backs. Like I say, we held Barkley to 15 for 22, 1.5 of Travis Etienne. We made him cough the ball up again. Like I say, we slammed the door shut in and Cook's day face, ended his day, then bottled up Madison, who came in relief. So we've faced some pretty serious rushing attacks this year, and we've stood up against them pretty well. It's a Chicago game. It's nice to see a team demoralized when they're playing the Lions. Like I said, we saw like in the third and the fourth quarter, they just wanted it to end. They were in pain. They were like an animal. They're like a deer that's been hit by a car that just wants you to bludgeon its skull in and just put them out of their misery. That's what Chicago were, and it was beautiful. The Jets, incredibly fortunate. Don't think we deserved to win. I don't think we did enough to win. Didn't do enough to lose. Just a really bad game. The Jets absolutely stunk. Like I say, that QB carousel, we didn't know who we were going to play. That was just one of those proper bogey games. And yeah, a bit of ingenious play calling really saved our blushes because both teams on the day were pretty bad. And then, yeah, everything's still kind of in the balance on the line, like you say, to go into Green Bay. None of this like, oh, Lions aren't going to play for the Seahawks. One like, bollocks, we had everything to play for. Like, fuck the Packers, fuck their season, fuck Aaron Rodgers. Like, say, go in there, slap the bearded piss mind tramp in the face and say, your days are numbered, old man. Like, say, your days are over. Like, say, and the last thing is he is going to remember is us ending in our playoff run live in prime time. And to me, that just capped off a perfect year. Could it have been better? Could we have made the playoffs? Sure. Would we have beaten the 49ers? No, people keep saying, oh, we had to beat them. I don't think we would have done. Like I said, we might have played a good game and played them really good, but I don't think we'd have stopped them. But our season was not defined by not making the playoffs. It was defined by laying egg after egg after egg, then turning a corner, and then suddenly ramming the ball down everyone's throats, and all the media having to say, sorry, we writ you off too soon. All those receipts we kept, all the people that were like, oh, we love Dan Campbell. But this team's going in such a great direction now after all giving this shit for last year. Like, we don't want your plaudits. We don't want your nice comments. Shove them up your ass, because the roads go through Detroit next year.
See, I think this season tells a lovely little story about the Lions. If you just look at it from the results side of things and the way they played, it tells a great story. You start off you know, with the same sort of plucky fighting team you had last year. It gets a win, it loses a few narrow ones, and then you see the slump. What happens when you've got a young team in a rebuild that have its confidence knocked, play some very hard opposition, and goes to a really low time? I think you are going to have those spurts when you're building entirely pretty much through youth. And then you see the renaissance, you see the wins start to arrive, you see the confidence and the belief start to arrive in them. And then that's when you see the good side of building from a young team, because a young team with confidence, its ceiling is so much higher than when it doesn't have it. That's kind of the game you're playing at this moment in time. You see the win streak, and then you get to the end of the season, you know, the form of their life they're in. Minnesota, we start with in this little section, beat the hell out of them. A team that's going to the playoffs, they hadn't even converted it at the time. We were miles away, and they were about to get into the playoffs. They had a lot more to play for than we did. We destroy them on both lines of scrimmage to sort of control the game and really not give them much of a look in against us. Just shows you how confident this team was and how much they wanted it, and just how much momentum can really influence you going forward. And then you get the road game against the Jets, and I don't think it's as bad as people make out. I really don't. I don't get why people aren't sort of like, oh, it was a bad game. It's showing the character of your team to be able to win those sort of games. You ain't going to win every game pretty. You know, we're on the road in New York again. People, oh, they can't play in the cold. Oh, they can't deal with this. Oh, Robert Saleh and the Jets at that point are still in playoff contention. They're still, you know, they're a good side at the end of the day. And we had to grit it out, which is what this team is about. We saw from the team exactly what we wanted to see from them. And yes, it took a play right at the end of the game from Brock Wright, etc., to win it. But the fact is, they would have lost that game 10 times out of 10 last year, or in the last 3 or 4 years, or even at the start of this season. You know, you're seeing the change in the attitude. They're never giving up, the belief they can win the games. The Jets, for me, was really big to be able to win that game. And then you get to the end of the story, nearly, the Panthers game. You've got to take into account, this is the first game since, I don't know, Holmes and Campbell arrived, that there's pressure on them. Because at that point, people are starting to talk playoffs. There's a route to the playoffs, which you control your own destiny if you keep winning. And they've never been exposed to that before. You are on the road against a very tough team, playing hard for an interim head coach. That is not a bad Carolina side. Its trenches are really damn good, as you can tell. The running back room is really good. And when you're playing under pressure of playoffs for the first time ever, in a cold weather environment, the coldest game they've ever had there, on a bad pitch, with a team that's going to smack you just as hard as you're going to hit them, you saw a team not know how to handle it. They started really bad early. They never really looked like they got into the game. And that's a lack of experience in big game situations showing there for them. So, of course, for me, it was disappointing, but it's all part of the build of this team. You have to, you're going to go through those lulls. They're not just going to start getting in playoff contention and winning all the time. It's something that you have to build up. And you see this as the season goes on. And again, you've got Chicago coming. You know, your season, you might not reach the playoffs, but you've still got to show the attitude to go out there and win games. And early in that game, you thought, oh God, it's happening again. They're running on us. They might be able to shock us here. No, the team took a little while to get out its funk. Then it took over and it did what it needed to do. And it absolutely beat the living daylights out of one of the worst sides in the NFL. And they were expected to do that. And again, that expectancy just has not been there in Campbell and Holmes' tenure. So when you're expected to win a game and you go out and win a game, now you're seeing the team sort of evolve in that department as well. It's like, right, the expectation's there. They went out and they did what they needed to. Great win. Then it comes to the Packers at the end of the season. And I think there will always be an asterisk against this because the playoffs aren't fully on the line. There's still something to play for, absolutely. You've still got to go out there and beat them. And they're the only team with something to play for. And to go out and win in the manner that you do is an incredible victory to end a season. Obviously, it would have been nice if the playoffs were on the line, because it would have been, again, another type of pressure the Lions are exposed to see whether they can handle it or not, because they're going to need to eventually. There's going to be a game which is going to guarantee you playoff qualification, and you're going to go out there and show you can deal with the pressure. But they still went out there and won with a terrific performance to the end of the season. And you look as a whole, what this team started as, talented, young, hardworking, put zero substance to it as whether it can go to the next step. It's got a lot to prove. And while it started off really rough, they rebounded in just about the most fantastic way possible. Very few teams come from 1-6 down to end with a record, a winning record at the end of the season. So where you have ended now is a team completely on the ascendancy that's shown it can deal with the pressure, that shows it can handle it all. The next step is showing that you can do it when it matters. But that's a year three problem, and we'll get to it when we arrive to it. But everything you could have wanted out of them this year, I think you've got. They've shown they can be legit. They've shown that they can win games. It was everything we needed to see. And I'm really happy with all of them. I know some people are disappointed. Oh, we didn't beat Carolina. We should have made the playoffs. Where you were this time 12 months ago, you are light years ahead of where you are. To have come this far in 2 years of a rebuild, from starting at literal ground zero, blown up, starting below that, you are absolutely taking this as progress. So long as you keep doing it going forward, that is fine. But for the end of the season, they could not have ended it more perfectly, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, and I think for me, again, these games just really cemented like our position in the NFC North, in that we've kind of dominated all the divisional rivals. Yeah, we lost that close one to the Vikings at the start, but we absolutely destroyed the Vikings in that second game. Like, I think we were like 15, 17 points up, like, in the second half. And, you know, I think they got some garbage time points back. But, you know, when Hutchinson took down Cousins at the start of the fourth quarter, when we were like 15 points in front, you could just see the Vikings were absolutely exposed and just completely fraudulent in terms of their record. They looked absolutely broken. And then to play the Bears, we went through the Bears like a chainsaw through a doll's house. I mean, we absolutely demolished them. And, you know, it just showed our position in our rebuild. You know, people saying that the Bears are in a rebuild, but, you know, they're going to catch up with the Lions and overtake us. I don't fucking think so. Like, we absolutely dominated them. And I think you've said it about the Panthers game, and, like, I couldn't say it more beautifully. Like, there had to be a slip, or there had to be a moment of adversity where we just didn't quite have enough. And the Panthers game was a perfect storm of factors that, you know, we were going to lay an egg sometime. And I kind of think that we've swerved a bullet, because I wouldn't want our season to end. The season's been so good in so many ways, and I wouldn't have wanted the season to end, you know, away at San Francisco in the playoffs, getting blown out, which I think we would. Like, I honestly think that this team's not quite at that level yet. I would much rather that the season finished with us going to Lambeau with that whole team of NFL pundits and so-called experts. Was it 13 out of 14 pundits who picked the Packers? I think it was only Tony Dungy out of, like, the panel that picked the Lions. And the other fucking idiots all swallowed the Rodgers yellow and green cheesy pill. And, you know, oh, the GOAT's going to be back. This is where Rodgers steps up. We absolutely ended Rodgers. We finished his career. Like, we've certainly finished his career at Green Bay. And to do it at Lambeau, just exploding all of the boring myths about, you know, Lambeau in January. Oh, who gives a fuck? We absolutely pulled their pants down. And to do that on prime time, like, that's the way I want to go out. That's my Lions. That's how I want to end up.
And you kind of believe in fate with this, don't you, really? I think it was fate that we lost to the Panthers the way that we did. I think that was the, you know, the ether telling us we're not ready for the playoffs yet. And you know what? That's fine. That's absolutely fine. We are 2 years into this rebuild. There is still a lot we need to work on. I'm with you. I didn't want to get blown out by somebody in a wild card. People go, oh, what, 0-4 in the playoffs since 2010, whatever. You get those narratives around you. Where we are now, how we finished the season, and how we've kept rebounding from disappointments, this puts us in better stead than losing a wild card this season for me. And the critical thing now is, as long as you get better next season, if you stop getting better, then this was worth nothing. But they have shown nothing so far to say that this progress is going to do anything but go forward even further. So, yeah, I just think it was fate telling us we are not ready. And again, that's all right.
Let me dive into some of the stats, some of the scouting report for the 2022 Detroit Lions. I'm going to start off with some overall stats and then go into the offense, as always do, leave the defense for just a little bit later in special teams. The expected win total for the season, Pro Football Reference has us at 9.1. Football Outsiders has it at 9.7. So this team is potentially slightly unlucky on its record. PFF had us at 80.9 overall, 15th best team in the NFL. The offense was 8th at 79.1, defense 29th at 60.2. Football Outsiders had us 7.7% overall, that's 11th. The offense was 13.3%, which is 5th. Defense 7.3% is 28th, and 1.8% for the special teams is 9th. The team scored 453 points. That's 26.6 points per game, despite scoring none against New England. And that is 5th in the NFL. They conceded 427. That's 25.1 points per game. That's 28th in the NFL. Offense led by Jared Goff. 382 completions on 587 attempts is 65.1% completions. 4,438 yards, 29 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, a passer rating of 99.3, a QBR of 61.1, that's 5th in the NFL, a PFF grade of 72.4, and a 0.171 EPA per dropback. That's 6th in the NFL if you like your advanced stats. Jamal Williams, first swag Kazakage, leader of the Hidden Village of the Dean. He had 262 yards for 262 carries for 1,066 yards, 4.1 yards per carry, 12 catches on 16 attempts for 73 yards as well, and 73.5 PFF grade. How many touchdowns did he end up with? 17 in the run game, none in the pass game. Also had DeAndre Swift, who had a sneaky good year, but only 3 really good games. 99 carries, that's almost a third of the carries that Williams had in the season. 99 carries, 542 yards, it's 5.5 yards per carry. And 48 catches on 70 attempts, 389 yards and 3 touchdowns, a PFF grade of 77.8, and also 5 touchdowns on the ground. Wide receivers, Amon-Ra St. Brown led the way, 9 carries for 95 yards and 106 catches, 1,161 yards, 11 yards per catch, 6 touchdowns and a 90.7 PFF grade. Number one on the offense in PFF grade, the second best receiver in the NFL by PFF grade. Also ably backed up by Khalif Raymond, 7 carries for 36 yards and 47 catches for 616 yards. No touchdowns, but a PFF grade of 72.1. Brock Wright had a good year as the backup tight end for half of it, and then coming in as the number one guy. 18 catches, 216 yards, 4 touchdowns for him. Other good grades in there: Penei Sewell, 80.3, Frank Ragnow, 77.9, Taylor Decker, 74.6, in a good year for the offensive line. Not so great grades for people who took significant snaps: Stenberg, 39.6, Skipper, 44.2, Nelson, 46.3, Kabinda, 48.5. So backup offensive line suffering a little, apparently. In terms of efficiency, on third down, 40.8% is 14th. Fourth down, 54.1% is 11th. And in the red zone, 45 touchdowns on 68 trips. That's 66% touchdowns in red zone trips. That's 4th in the NFL. The offensive line, the first team offensive line, it really came up big when it mattered the most. And actually, you can see when the offensive line didn't play well, boys, because that coincided with the Lions not playing very well on offense in that sort of awkward stretch from game 3 to 7. But otherwise, the receivers came to play, Williams came to play, and Goff, outside of that 3-4 game stretch, had an unbelievable season. On the offense, it was some of the best football we've ever seen as Lions fans, I think.
I couldn't fault the offense for most of the year. I think we knew going into the season where our strengths were. This season backed up our strengths. and it's now concrete where we need to improve. And it's only on one side of the ball. I said one. So yeah, offense for me, great. Backup all line really worries me. Right guard position, just it's got to be upgraded. I'm sorry. But some, most of those backup all line, let's say, well, they've got to go. Just not good enough. And they just don't carry enough weight to do signing. But the first string all line, kind of saw those flickers of everyone saying it can be the best unit in the NFL. It did have its moments in games where it did play like it. So yeah, like I said, they're all tied down, they're all coming at their prime. So right now, we're in a really good spot. Yeah, Khalif Raymond, just a really nice, good guy, underrated year. Came up clutch in big moments, especially on second and third down. Really dug us out some holes because defenses still just don't pay him enough respect. For who we were working with in the tight end group, I'd say we got pretty good production. But I'd say it's one of those rooms where it's kind of just like, say, a lot of inexperienced guys thrown together, just fighting away like a dog pile for snaps who wants to get the most attention in the offense. Brock Wright kind of held his head above water the most. I feel like it's a good group. It needs some addition, like I say, but it can be even better next year. Like I say, these guys are coming in the second and third years. If we can make a solid addition, I feel like that is the position that can make the biggest jump next year. But across the board, offense held its own nearly every week. Like I say, if you overlook the Patriots game, it hardly put a foot wrong all year. And Jared Goff, yeah, really silenced a lot of the critics. Like I say,
we've still got Jameson Williams to come.
Yeah, is like Darren really? Goff the future of 2023 Detroit Lions? Absolutely. That jumped without doubt. 2024 and onwards, will remain to be seen. And yeah, the connection with Jameson Williams was never there. It was never going to be there. They just don't click. Like I said, he had like 9 attempts, like 8 of them landed at his feet and all weren't catchable. So like I said, their rhythm and timing just wasn't there because Jameson was just not integrated into the offense with enough time to get anything. So I expect them to be catching balls all off season. They should spend a lot of time together, and I expect that. Yeah. It was a great offense all round, and it won up many plaudits, and it excites me for the future because it needs very little work, just a few minor tweaks. And I think even if losing Ben Johnson shouldn't affect it, I feel like Ben Johnson is not this offense. And it will not fail or succeed with him staying or leaving. It just won't be defined by that.
I mean, it's kind of been a bit of a roller coaster ride with it, hasn't it? I think it started off well. Everyone was sort of purring about the offense and how well it was doing. And then it went in a big-ass slump and just didn't come to life. I mean, 6 points in 2 games is not acceptable in any facet of it. And the fact that it's because your 2 playmakers are out shows a lack of depth when it comes to guys who can change games around. I mean, I remember that. I remember over a whole season what happens. I know this offense has done a lot of good, but you look at the end of the Minnesota Vikings game, they couldn't string a drive together to save their lives. We had 3 or 4 opportunities to kill that game, and they got overpowered on the line of scrimmage. They got bullied by that team and ultimately cost us the game. And then after the Seattle game, it went to sleep. And it's concerning how we missed our 2 big guys so much and no one stepped up in their place. Having said that, you know, they rebounded incredibly well. I mean, the Green Bay game wasn't even pretty. But then when you start getting to the Chicago game, when you start moving on from then onwards, things seem to click a lot better. And I think, yeah, it's down to the quarterback. I think, you know, we had a lot of issues with Goff. We said, is he really the leader on that offense? The quarterback's meant to be the guy who leads by example. And there've been a lot of questions on that, but you've seen it in Goff's demeanor through this season. He's been Detroitified, or whatever you want to call it. The way he dresses, the way he acts, he seems to have embraced the city. He seems to have taken on its identity, and he himself seems to have gotten a lot tougher. He's cut out the interceptions. He's been really good with the ball. The knock on him was the turnovers and the giveaways. And outside of the one botched snap that, you know, messed us around a few weeks back, he's been amazing when it comes to that. And you feel like he's really taken control of the offense finally. He's got his weapons in. He's performing well with it. The line came back to life. We've been running the ball a bit better. And it all starts with your quarterback. So, I mean, as far as that goes, you can't have any questions whatsoever. I think, you know, when it's fully fit, it's certainly the best offense in the NFC North. It's probably one of the better offenses in the NFC, period. Now, you can't, you know, as good as it's been, you also have to look. There are issues where it's going to improve. You mentioned the backup O-line. It's been horrific. And I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It's been awful. We want to thank our lucky stars that Taylor and Penne have been the virtue of health this season, because behind it, there isn't much. You know, the right guard position, we have really struggled. I know Evan Brown's done all right in there, but he ain't a long-term solution at that point. It's not going anywhere. Obviously, Frank is amazing, but you need Evan back as your backup guard again. And then you need to get some real guards in here who are going to contribute going forward, because I don't think we're going to. It's very rare you get an offensive line that stays this healthy throughout the year. Obviously, we lost a battle, but outside of that, we've been very lucky with our starters, apart from at right guard. And it's an issue that needs dealing with. We need a proper swing tackle. We need some backup guards. We need to move Evan back to where he's good, which is backing up Frank. You know, in tight ends, probably going to be able to get away with them. That's fine, but you need running backs. Swift, it's 3 years of inconsistency and ill health. And we know how good he is. We were having this chat earlier in Luke's Discord. He is a great player and he's a game changer. But when we needed him, he's not there in the Panthers. He's not there in the Patriots game. He's not there in the Cowboys game. He's hurt. The offense suffers because of that. And I think you've got to make some more investment in there. Keep your running back room churning out. Get some guys in. Use them differently. Just lessen his workload so we're not as reliant on him going forward. But outside of that, it's like I said, it's backup O-line, maybe another running back. You've got your main guys, which is the important thing, and they play very well. But we've got to get the depth ready for next year, because we are up against a lot of high-scoring, high-octane offenses next year, and we're going to need it to be on point. So we're going to need everywhere good depth, play well, keep us in games. But overall, it's been great, and Ben Johnson's been great, and it's been great to see the improvement of them all. Penne's an all-star in 2 years, an all-pro, sorry. In 2 years, the line's been great. You know, your tight ends have stepped up and done what they needed to. So overall, really good. But don't think there aren't issues that we do need to address next year, when we can't afford 6 points in two games next season, because we want the playoffs and the division, and that will not be good enough.
Moving.
Yeah, I think there's three. Like, you need to have like a spine running through like any like unit. And I think we've got like three players that just stand out in terms of not just their performance, but just the attitude and how important they are to the team. And you've got Frank Ragnow at center, who's just the absolute linchpin in terms of how he is as a professional and his attitude and how he plays through anything. And he's just so consistent. And then you've got Jamal Williams, who has just brought a spark to the whole franchise. You know, in terms of how he runs hard. He never shirks a block. And he makes the odd fumble or drops a daft, easy pass. But his head never goes down and he comes back. And then you've got Amon-Ra, who is just an absolute star. Like, not just in terms of like making the clutch catches, but like the pass blocking is just elite. And I think those three individuals have just absolutely been the backbone of our offense and have kind of given Goff a platform, because in so many other franchises, the pressure's all on the quarterback in terms of how they perform. And I think Goff has kind of got through some games by the skin of his teeth, and, you know, almost thrown a pick here and there and made a couple of questionable decisions. But then one of these three guys will come back and bail him out, because they'll absolutely make a play. They'll do something outstanding. And I think it's these three that have given the platform for everyone else. And then as people got more healthy and came back, you know, we've been able to shine. And can I just also say, and I'm sure I will get some flack from this in the chat, but I think DeAndre Swift has had a really good end to the season. And I've been critical of him and his kind of fragility. And maybe, you know, like, I know people have been accusing him of not wanting to take a hit, But look at the way the players love him. Look at the way that locker room is absolutely supportive of him. They would not be doing that if he was not pulling his weight. And I think you've seen, because of the performance of Jamal, I think you've seen DeAndre Swift really taking a role model from him, because Swift has got better and better and better. And as he's got healthier and he's made less mistakes, for me, he's really shown some potential. And when he takes off and when he starts, you know, gets the ball in his hands and starts going down the field, he is absolutely one of our skilled players. And I think the fans have been a bit hard on him, in my view, this season.
I'm going to move this on over to the defense and let me give you the scouting report and the stats on this one. The leading tackler is Alex Anzalone with a fairly stellar year by his standards. One interception, six passes defensed, one fumble recovery, one and a half sacks, 125 tackles, 77 of which solo, seven tackles for a loss, seven quarterback hits, PFF grade of 58.1. Leading sack master general is Hutchinson with three interceptions, three passes defended, two fumble recoveries, nine and a half sacks, 52 tackles, 34 of which solo, nine tackles for a loss, 15 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 80.7. That's the top grade on the defense. But he was backed up ably by Houston, who came in like an absolute storm. A fumble and a fumble recovery, eight sacks, 12 tackles, 11 of which solo, seven tackles for loss, 11 quarterback hits, 80.2 PFF grade, was second on the defense. Kirby Joseph was the leading interceptor, four for him, eight passes defensed, forced fumbles and a fumble recovery. Those two forced fumbles were absolutely huge in the context of those games as well. 82 tackles, 55 of which solo, a quarterback hit, and a 64 PFF grade. Some of the worst grades on there. There's no other really good grades on our defense. Some of the worst grades on there, Amani with 30, Julian Aquara with 46.7, and then two unfair ones for play earlier on in the year, but they came one well down the stretch. Bugs with 53.1, Jones 53.3. In terms of efficiency, 92 conversions on 204 attempts is 45.1%, which is 30th. On fourth down, 15 on 27 is 55.6%, is 20th. And in the red zone, gave up 37 touchdowns on 58 trips, at 63.8%, which is 27th. Special teams, Badgley made 20 of 24 field goals and 33 of 33 extra points. He was perfect in that regard. Jack Fox, 71.7 touchback rate on kickoffs, 48.6 yards per punt gross, 41.2 net, and a 26.9% punt rate inside the 20. Punt return of Raymond's got 20 returns for 264 yards, 13.2 yards per punt return, which is exceptional. A touchdown in there too. And Justin Jackson was the main kick returner, 23 returns for 613 yards and an average return of 26.7, which again is exceptional. Other stats, the Lions went 12-5 against the spread in the season. And considering, as Ant said, we scored 6 points in two games, you take those two out, we went 12-3 against the spread, which is incredible. And we were 15, we gave away 15 turnovers. That's the lowest number in the NFL. Boys, this defense was, if I remember rightly, through 1-6, the worst post-merger defense in NFL history. And yet you come down to game 17, week 18, and they're ranked 27th or 28th. Now that doesn't seem great, but in order to get from the worst defense in NFL history in recent memory to that level, they basically played at a top 10 level down the stretch. People are going to get lost in that bottom of the NFL type of ranking. But context matters, and when it mattered the most recent history that we have, the last nine games, this defense really showed up. You have a look at the play of Benito Jones, Isaiah Bugs, Hutchinson, Houston, Anzalone was huge down the stretch. Kirby Joseph had a wobble in the middle there, but he started and ended magnificently. This defense is a lot more ready to go for me than people think. Yeah, it could do with upgrades. It could do with a couple of vets. But you take those last eight games, there's no reason why we can't start next season playing exactly like they have just been doing. Wipe away Carolina, it's been a terrific second half of the season for these boys.
I completely disagree. Like, the defensive front bailed out that dog shit secondary all season. I'm sorry, the cornerback room, it needs clearing out. Other than Kirby Joseph, most of them just not good enough. Don't want him here next year. Like I say, through that 5-8 game stretch, like I say, Pascal, Houston, Bugs, Benito, Hutch, Anzalone, Malcolm, that defensive front and that box constantly getting pressure is the only reason this secondary stopped being exploited. It did not get much better over the year. I think those stats are really lopsided. I say Jeff fell off a cliff. An illness, injury, his player, which is bad. And I'm really not convinced by the future for him. So Will Harris, this affinity this team's have for him, like I say, showing an ability to make big fuck-ups at every position you put him, come in at critical downs, like I say, or a warrior, like I say, that the end of the season, like I say, where Jeff goes out hurt and then instantly comes in, gives up the huge player to Watson while trying to rugby tackle him. That kind of just sums up the kind of love-hate relationship for these kind of defenders. I love Jerry Jacobs, but just for me, and from a team that's winning a division, he's not a starting caliber. He's a good back of a rotation, but he needs better quality. Like I say, if it right now is in no man's land, just doesn't have a position.
What does Iffy do? What's his purpose in this franchise?
He gets screwed over by the boss.
He's screwed, right? Say, because it's just that it really is the bare bones of a back end, and only two or three guys did themselves any justice. So yeah, they were constantly bailed out by a team that finally is able to harass the quarterback. Like I say, Hutch died slow, did not adjust to life in the NFL very well. Overshooting, didn't know how to beat double teams, didn't pull out the full arsenal. And that was fine because he was a rookie. Down the line, started to get a bit more clever, not go full blast for a quarter and a half and be gassed the second half, manage his pace. James Houston, I've only seen a small sample size, so it's hard for me to say if he's the real deal, but everything I saw was legit. I would love to now see it over a 17-game span. And I think he's earned the right next year to really challenge like Aquara on pass rushing downs. He's earned those first and second down reps. Next year, he won't just be a designated first fourth down pass rusher. He can challenge Romeo. Like I say, we've still got Harris. Like I say, Bugs. Like I say, came in, like I say, we're all like, oh, he's a camp body. Like 12.5% missed tackle rate. Like I say, the guy's been a liability his whole career and became a real good stalwart. Him and McNeil formed a really good partnership down the line. Benito Jones chipped in well. Kaminsky, let's say, what a revelation he turned out to be. Played his ass off with a busted hand for a good three quarters of the season. And in the end, even looked better with the club on. Even asked the team doctor, can I play with it on? I said, can I go with it? It makes him feel better. So, yeah, the defensive front just fills me with so much hope. I just feel glee. The linebacker spot, Anzalone, for me, he's a must re-sign because the depth's just not there behind him yet. If the depth was behind him, I'd gladly let him see it. But yeah, Malcolm, huge surprise. Like I say, really came to play this year. Showed everyone wrong about the size, the arm questions. Derek Barnes showed the flashes, but still not seeing any consistency through 2 years. So he's one of those that I need to see more from. Julian, another guy in no man's land. Probably can't be here next year. Brian can't be here next year. Guys like that have had enough chances and just think, but yeah, we need serious investment. It's going to be another defensive heavy draft because the stats you outline, like you say, we're bottom 25 in nearly all categories. Third down, abysmal for most of the year. Even in the games we won, still getting punished constantly on that money down, not recognising motions like that. So yeah, it's a tale of two halves as this team. It got better when we fired Pleasant. I don't know how much effect that actually happened. I don't know. I can't say really what changed once he got fired. But things kind of clicked, got better. I don't know. It's hard to say. But yeah, it had its moments, but the offense really kind of like dragged it across the finish line in most games. So I think a lot of these are very fixable. He's going to need some draft capital, a bit of money. And luckily, we've got that this year. We can restore the balance of this team in one off season. I feel very confident about that.
Bring balance to the force. I mean, I think this year for me wasn't necessarily about establishing the group as a unit. It was about weeding out the chafe. And I think we found that. Brockers, see you later. On your ass out of here. Amani, disgusting season from him considering his payment year and that he should be playing for a contract. He didn't want it. He didn't want to be part of BE. He didn't want the smoke. Gone. You know, I think this feels like the year where we're finally starting to say goodbye to the last of the bad contracts here that we've been sort of saddled with. And, you know, I think we're getting rid of the players who don't fit this defense very well. And individually, the youngsters, you've seen everything you want to see from them, from Kirby, from Malcolm, from Hutch. All these guys have come in and performed well. You've seen the right sort of vets arrive. And that's why I'm critical about having good vets here. You've seen the likes of Kaminsky and Bugs come in with a point to prove, and they want to be here. Those two in one more game put in more effort than Nick Williams did in this franchise for 2 years and got paid insanely more money to not do anything. That is kind of what gets your defense going. But I'm on Ryan's side here. We're a lot further away than we are closer right now. There's still a lot we need to invest in here. The defensive line is looking really good. You know, obviously, maybe we want another DT in there, more of a pass rushing guy to let Aleem do his thing, but you're kind of there. But after that, the linebacker room is still very raw. It's a lot better than it was at the start of the year, but it's got no depth. You've really got to get depth guys in there. And the secondary, again, I'm with Ryan. There's a lot that needs sorting because there's a lot of problems there. Corners need more. You need multiple high in this draft. Really get that room stacked. Get another veteran in, someone who is going to lead by. We've had trouble with veteran corners for years, but we've still got to find that guy. You've got to find that one and true undisputed leader on your defense. I mean, the games where it was like the Panthers game I used as an example. It was such a blatantly obvious game that no one could pick them up and stop the run. Someone who's going to really and truly lead by example, make that big tackle, make that big play that's going to pull them out of a slump and get them there. That's what it still lacks. I mean, I don't doubt there's some individual leaders on there, but there's no defensive actual leader out on there, which you need to set the standard and ensure that no one falls below it. You still got to have that. You still got to have a bit more depth in there. We still can't defend tight ends to save our life. We're still having trouble on third and longs. These are critical things. These aren't like small problems that we're going to fix. We can say the defense played better, but again, stronger schedule next year, a lot tougher teams. You are going to need to fix these problems or we are going to lose a lot of games. They're not small issues. So you've got to sort it somehow. You've got to sort the tight end issue, the third down issue, you know, 2-minute drills. We got a little bit better this year, you know, because of all the times we were giving up all that. But think of the Bills. They moved it so far on us, so little amount of time. Why? DBs aren't good enough. The corner's not good enough. You know, you're giving up stupid plays like that and giving up games. You cannot afford to do that. So you've got to carry on investing strongly. You've got to find some vets to come in and complement like we have on the defensive line. And you've got to sort out some real problems on this team. These are big technical and fundamental problems that will hold us back if we do not solve them. So as the defense this year in a whole, I know I sounded very negative then, I am absolutely delighted with the young players on the team and how they have put their foot down this year. I think we found a lot of foundational pieces going forward, you know, which is something we've not had in a long time. But to get the whole defense ready into action, performing like a top half of the league defense, we've still got a long way to go. It's going to be critical in free agency that we get it right and get some vets in. And then it's going to be critical in the draft that we go after our problem areas, corners, more linebackers. You've got 5 picks in the top 80. You've got a cornerback heavy class. You've got a very good linebacker class as well. Go out and finish it and keep building it. But you're not there yet.
Yeah. Can I just give a shout out to a defensive player that I think has gone under the radar? And that's Deshaun Elliott. Like, Love him. Absolutely love him to bits. An absolute hard-hitting guy. Like a beast in terms of tackling. Yeah, he's like made a couple of mistakes. He's only like 25. Like, I thought he was much older. He's 25. Like, he's going to improve. And he's really brought something to our safety room. You know, I agree with a lot of what you guys have said. You know, Kirby has obviously got loads of potential. Tracy Walker is coming back, but, you know, he has had a big injury. So I think the safety room with Elliot is not looking too bad. But for me, there's two areas that we need to draft. Number one, by far, is a cornerback. We absolutely must draft with one of our first round picks, a cornerback, because it's just so thin there. And this is a passing league, and I just cannot watch another season of Will Harris on toast. Like, I don't want to see it. Amani, I don't want to ever see him wearing a Lions jersey ever again. Like, we've seen him too many times making stupid mistakes, getting burnt, missing tackles, lining up in the wrong place, penalties. The experiment is over. The results are in. He's done. Like, let's not carry on doing this with Amani. He's got to go. Jacobs has been good. Akuda is like, you know, and this is the thing with Akuda. Akuda had a massive injury. He's come back. He's played okay in patches, but he's clearly still like rusty and maybe still suffering from after effects of an injury. But guess what? Straight in at CB1 because there's no one else. And this is where we've gone wrong with Akuda. Akuda will be a great cornerback 2 or cornerback 3, like when he's fully healthy. But we can't rely on him to be CB1 based on the last couple of years. So let's draft a really, really good cornerback. Let's keep, and again, I think at the second is a linebacker. Like Anzalone and Malcolm, they've both played well. It's too thin. We need a stud linebacker. You know, you look at the top defenses, you look at the Bengals, you look at the 49ers. You know, these guys have got linebackers for days. The Buccaneers winning the Super Bowl, a lot of it was because of their linebacker room. And we absolutely have to invest. So I want to see a cornerback. I want to see a linebacker. That has to be done. And let's just stop the, you know, let's just cut some of these players dead that just haven't been good enough. I don't want to see them coming back next season.
And it's critical that they're schematically correct for us. I'm fed up with seeing us have like zone corners in here. You've got to have guys who are man specialists. You really do, because of the system that we run here. And as for a linebacker, we need a big fucker who can deal with tight ends. You know, that is something that we need, someone who can match up and lay a hit on them and stop them going, and is good enough in coverage to do so. So it's very critical we get the right guys for the system. But I feel that Brad Holmes knows that. He's not a BPA guy. I think he's a guy who will find the right system guys here. And I think corner is the next place he's going to go. And I mean, moving Giffy back could help as well. I mean, he's been screwed by this franchise so much. Put him out there. Put another two corners in. You've got five good ones then. You can rotate. You can do what you need to. So it's vital that they're the right type of guys for us, not necessarily the best on the board at the time.
We'll come on to shows in this offseason, actually not too far away from now, about free agency, about who's going to go, about who's going to stay, our wish list for that sort of thing. So it's all coming down the stretch, although I have just put in the chat that Byron Jones is going to be available and I think he'd be a fit. Whether he's got the right attitude, don't know. But anyway, I'm just going to throw that one in there. And then I'm just going to say to you guys, before we go into the award nominations, any high-level takes on the 2022 season for the Detroit Lions very quickly?
It went better than I hoped, I think, in all facets of the game. The cap situation's getting better. The young players have developed. We couldn't have asked for more development from the young players, and we won games to back up our promise. So everything I wanted from this season, I got. And I'm not. There's nothing really for me to complain about, bar nitpicky things. So fantastic season as far as I'm concerned.
It went exactly as I expected. The good and the bad Nothing surprised me. Right. I knew we'd start slow, finish well. Next year, start quick. But that's the only thing we need to do is literally just start better.
Yeah, I think, like for me, fuck the Packers. Like we've absolutely stopped them dead in the tracks, and we've made a massive statement in the NFC North, and we've ended Rodgers. Let's go.
I'm quickly interested before we do move on though. What's your expectations for next year now compared to what they would have been? I think we're all saying NFC North's a minimum next year.
No.
For me, win the division. Like that's the number one now. Let's 5-1 divisional record again, and let's win the division. It's got to be. And like, you know, I don't think the division is going to be that good. We could win it like with a 10-7 record. Like that's absolutely got to be with an Aggie and Aggie. We'll have a tougher schedule next year. So yeah, for me, 10-7, like absolute minimum.
The baseline is 500. Anything lower is unacceptable. Like I said, I will not tolerate 8 or 9 or worse now. Like we've made a rod for our own back, and that's fine. Division. Yeah, I think, like I say, the Vikings are about to have a fire sale. Probably have to trade Danielle Hunter. Can't afford to pay him. Kirk sinks them. Mm-hmm. Like I say, they're losing key veterans. The Bears have got an arsenal, a treasure chest. But they've got a lot of problems to fix in one season. And I think the Bears have got a good future, but it's too soon for them. We're just a step ahead of them right now. Packers, same thing. Fucked. Can't bring back half that team. Tonyan and that, they won't be able to pay them. Like I said, they're looking at really bad cap situation. So, yeah, 10-11 wins. Try and win the division. At worst, we must make the playoffs as a wild card. Like I said, I anything else would just feel underwhelming. Like I said, we know where we are now.
I think the question is really interesting because is your question how low can we go? Or is the question, where are you going to be disappointed at?
My question is, what is your expectation? Your own personal thing, given how they've ended, given where the rest of the divisions are, you know, what do you expect from this team? Because first year, we all said, kind of a giveaway year. It doesn't matter. As long as the team fights hard and shows progress developing his rookies, fine. They've done that. This year, we were all betting 7, 8, 9, 10 wins. Come to fruition. We've done that. So what do you expect this year based on how they've ended? Obviously, it can change off the offseason. But right now, what do you want them to do next year?
I fully expect 9 wins. That is what I expect us to do.
That's less than you said last year.
But then, what the fuck? But then the thing is, you know, the Caldwell thing gets legitimacy then. We didn't accept that 7
okay,
years ago.
But hang on a minute. I'm not talking about Caldwell. It's a completely different situation with completely different context. You ask, what am I thinking about next year? People are talking about it being a harder schedule, and I'm not 100% sure I buy that, but I think it's going to be there or thereabouts. The biggest thing about this team is it got exceptionally lucky pretty much the entire season with injury. The whole bulk of the side, apart from a couple of games with a couple of wide receivers, was pretty much healthy the whole way through the year. No one on the offensive line, apart from Vitae, went down. Amon-Ra was healthy all year. Jamal was healthy all year. Most of the defense was healthy all year. If we get an average amount of injuries...
Pascal didn't play all year. We had Tom Kennedy playing again this season.
I was just about to say...
Not as healthy as you remember.
You have gone out your way to trash our road schedule next year, despite me saying it's very difficult, and pretty much everyone's saying we're going to sweep at home or good enough. 9 wins seems unambitious.
I think that we get 9 wins and we win the NFC North with 9 wins. Because I think the Packers should be aiming for about 4 wins, and if they get that, they're lucky. The Vikings will be about 5-6 wins, and the Bears will probably contend with us for the division. I think the Bears will get to about 7 or 8 wins, and it will be thereabouts. Have a look at what the Jags did last year, and the Bears are in the same spot. If they do what the Jags did, I think their coach is okay. I think they'll be there or thereabouts. But looking at 2023 is going to be for another show. So, let's leave that content.
Every single game, that we have a two-score lead in. I expect to win. I will not tolerate any more blown leads or half-time.
Yeah.
Let's let Matt back away from these insane takes and give him some space to rethink.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to be serious. I think they'll fix the issue.
I love the idea that the Lions getting 9 wins and having a second winning season in half a decade is an insane take. I'm sorry. Have you forgotten what the Lions are? Have you really forgotten what the Lions have been? I'm sorry.
Have we forgotten where we want to go? If you get 9 wins and don't make a wild card again next year, you've got to keep getting better. And we've got a young nucleus, which is getting a lot better. The cap's going to be better. You've got a lot of players bogging your team down.
You are the man who just said that blips in the road sometimes happen and that shouldn't detract from the overall project. What if a blip is a bit longer than one game and it just derails you? We had the blip this year and we recovered from it. But what if it's just here or there all the way through the season and we grind our way to 9 wins and we have significant injuries? You know, like, it happens. It just happens in the NFL. And yeah, okay, we had Tom Kennedy out there, but we always had Amon-Ra out there, and he's the second best wide receiver in the NFL. And we always had Cleef Raymond out there, who actually had an underrated, fantastic year. Like, we didn't have absolutely no one out there. What I'm saying is, you should expect regression from this offense because it was so damn good, and backing that up year to year doesn't happen often. And this defense played at an unbelievable rate down the stretch. And if you don't think you're going to get regression there, I think you're deluded. I'm sorry, but
two words, Jameson Williams.
Okay. And I buy that. This is
very eye opening to me. This is very regression. We're in year two of a rebuild, and you're saying that our entire team's going to regress. That is not a good thing.
But regression to the mean happens both ways. I think the defense also could get better. I don't know. We'll see. What matters most is the offseason and what Brad does, and whether he does, as you say, get scheme fits in positions of need, or not even drafting for need, getting the best players available and getting rotations in there. It's all to be seen. And to be honest, it will to be seen in the remainder of this offseason. We are very premature on this conversation.
It was just an interesting take from how the season had ended as to maybe...
Indeed.
Is it different to what you thought year three would be? Did you think you'd be contending for an NFC North and playoffs in year three? Not everyone did. So I just thought it was interesting to see how the expectations had changed.
Right. It's time for us to reveal the nominations for the Rural Alliance 3rd Annual End of Season Awards. We started doing it in 2020. It's one of my favorite days of the year, this time next week, to reveal who has won. And there are 2 fan awards. You guys will be voting for 2 of the awards. We're going to put out the Google Forms out there so you guys can vote for those awards. We're going to tell you who the nominations are now for the ones that we're going to vote for as well. And guys, I just want a quick takeaway from each one, not about which one you think is going to win, because that's going to be too spoilery, but just some high-level takes about these things. The first one is Game of the Year, and I'm not sure this is going to be that close, but we'll see. Nominees for this one: Washington in Week 2, Chicago victory in Week 10, Giants victory in Week 11, Jacksonville win in Week 13, and Green Bay final day of the year. Thoughts on Game of the Year? Because last year it was pretty hard to even get a few games in this one.
Any of the 5 NFC North wins were beautiful.
Yeah, I think this is more difficult than it might be. It might seem on the lead of things.
Moving on to Play of the Year, and we have a fan-voted Moment of the Year, and there's a little bit of crossover, but we're voting for this ourselves. The 5 nominees are Sewell catch against Minnesota, the Kirby Joseph second pick against Aaron Rodgers, Akuda's pick 6 of Fields, Jameson Williams' first touchdown for the Lions, or the James Houston hop sack. What do you think, boys?
An interesting list.
I'm happy for Jeff. Like I say, I liked his play. Like Jameson Williams touchdowns, felt hollow, but totally blown coverage. Like,
I'd put the flea flicker in if it had not been banjaxed by Matt Nelson, which is a shame.
I love the James Houston track, but I like to say it's just funny. It's just funny to watch.
My favourite bit of commentary all year, Penne Sewell is in motion. Awesome.
Next is our Walter Payton Man of the Year Style Award. So this is for not just play on the field, but personality and charitable work and all of that man of the community stuff off the field. Got six names in this one this year. Jared Goff, Penne Sewell, Jamal Williams, Jason Kabinda, Malcolm Rodriguez, and Frank Ragnow. Every single one of them deserve to be lauded for who they are off the field. Thoughts on that list, boys? Because I think there's a few on there who are mainstays who kind of are nominated for this every single year because they are who they are. But some are newcomers, and it really shows up who they've been this year.
Easiest decision of the lot. Easiest decision of them all.
Now, I think I've learned the most about him than I've more learned about anyone. I've watched him on YouTube, learned about his life, because I didn't really know a lot about him since he's been here. But yeah, he's gone through some tough times and yeah, started to charity works for kids. Loves his fishing. Like I say, he seems like a really cool guy. If I could have a beer with any of them on that list, I think I'd have a beer with Frank. Just have a chat.
Arkansas legend as well. Might get to play with an Arkansas QB next year.
Going on to Coach of the Year, and this one is a shorter list. It's not that the coaches haven't done well, but there are some outstanding candidates, and it starts at the top with the head coach, Dan Campbell, offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, as well as defensive line coach, Todd Wash, and linebackers coach, Kelvin Shepherd. Boys.
Been a good year for a lot of the coaches. I mean, yeah, it's... The D line and O line coaches, the trench coaches have been amazing, both of them. You know, the linebackers, rookies have shown incredible improvement in there. It's very difficult, this one actually is, but again, testament to kind of the staff that has been put together. Everyone doubted it. Young players, not a lot of experience in there, but it doesn't matter about the experience, it matters if they've got that want in them and their potential to do their jobs well. And yeah, it's been an amazing staff assembled together, and we should treasure it while we can.
I think the only guy not listed in that is probably Brunel, let's say, because for what he's done, whatever he's done with Jared, so some relationship with them. Yeah, I have an affinity with Kelvin. Like I say, Kelvin's like that kind of like spirit animal. Like I say, he's just energetic. And to be honest, he's not had much talent to work with. I'll just say, like I say, before this season started, it was Anzalone and a bunch of kids and guys off the street. And the linebackers did themselves justice this year. So, yeah, the defensive guys really worked with some less than desirable resources.
It was great to get to know the coaches more in Hard Knocks. That, I think that was really good this season.
I just want to really big up Todd Wash, because Ryan said it. The second, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with the bit of trashing the secondary, but the bit about the defensive line saving the secondary, I buy. The defensive line stood up and was excellent, especially down the stretch. And Todd Wash, who, and I remember week six, us going, who are they going to fire? And Aubrey Pleasant ultimately was the one that went. And we were both saying, Todd Wash could be on the block. Like, the defensive line is not doing well. And since that moment when Pleasant went, it's been a complete turnaround for him. So I just want to laud him, because he's not going to be a name that people are going to be shouting about very much, but he's really turned up as much as the players have.
Well, we said at the start of the season, he could be the most crucial coach to our entire year. You can go back and see it, because that's exactly what I said. I remember saying it, you know, because everyone's talking about Glenn needing to do well and that, but it was the D-line that we were going to live or die by this year. And we were fully justified after 6 weeks. It was not good. It was getting run all over. It was not getting sacks. It was not getting pressures. It wasn't doing a great deal apart from outside of that Washington game. And as we all know, that Washington team is horrendous. Lots of bad teams have put a beating on them. Since then, like you said, he has got a lot better. You know, the job that's been done with Houston, rotating him in and getting the snaps you need to, the job done with Kamish and Bugs, it's been a tremendous resurgence from there. So I think he was rightly having questions asked about him, but he has answered it. And he did prove to probably be the most valuable coach on this team this year, because that is ultimately what got us quite a few wins at the end of the day. Big plays by the D-line.
Moving on to the next award, which is signing of the year. So someone new coming in, be that acquisition via trade, in free agency, or from waivers during the season. And it's a fairly strong list, I think. John Kaminsky, Isaiah Bugs, Deshaun Elliott, and Benito Jones. Now, we've had off seasons where we made bigger splashes. These guys have not exactly come heralded. I think the biggest contract out there is Elliott for like $1.5 or $2 million. But they've all come up big during the season for us, and that speaks volumes considering how much they've been paid this year.
I think it's notable they're all on the defensive side of the ball. Like when we had like 10 games with Deshaun Elliott and then like 3 games without him, you kind of noticed, didn't you? You kind of realised when Elliott wasn't on the field and they were using like Moore or Iffy. Like say, it looked like it was a gaping hole there. So some of them had left their mark on the team, and when they weren't available, it was kind of glaringly obvious. But yeah, I think they've all, for the value of money, they've all done equally as good job. Because like I said, we've paid them all little to nothing above that minimum. So yeah, all great additions for the cost.
And it's kind of a big boon to your GM to find that talent. I mean, he finds it everywhere. We've had trouble with vets for years and years and years. We really struggle to get good ones. And for all these guys to sort of come in and stake a claim and make themselves big parts of this team, you know, we can barely find one sometimes, let alone maybe 3, 4, 5 of them. Who knows? But it just shows what a great general manager we have. And it's kind of really exciting seeing him have money and all these picks this year coming up to do with. I think he's going to do something special.
Yeah, I think for me, it is quite a no-names list. And I'm just really excited about who we could potentially bring in next year. But the people that have come in have all contributed, on certainly on this list anyway. So I think the Ravens made a mistake letting Elliott go.
Going on to comeback player of the year. Now this one is distinct to the award which is going to be coming up next, simply because the next award is going to be for players who were definitely on the roster. This one is limited to players who've come through some adversity. So it could have sat out a year, could have had injury, could have had, you know, some significant bad play, although that's covered in the next award mostly. The nominees for this one, they're all really to do with injury, and they're all on the lines from last year, actually. It's Jerry Jacobs, Frank Ragnow, and Jeff Okuda. Now, Okuda, for the play down the stretch, is an interesting one, but I think considering where he's been and some people saying cut him before the season, I think at least for the first half of the year needs to be recognised. Ragnow obviously has not missed a huge amount of time, but he's been struggling with injury for like the last 2 years with the turf toe, so he deserves some recognition for just playing through it, I think, and the level of play he sustained. It's not at that top level of centres, I don't think. He has been making mistakes, but if you have a look at turf toe and what it does to you, and the fact that he's been playing at a top half of the NFL caliber is absolutely exceptional with what he's had to deal with. And then Jerry Jacobs might even be our cornerback one right now, and he had that awful ACL injury. Boys, it's a hell of a list, even though it's only three.
Yeah,
but they've all, Frank's not skipped a beat. Does that? Even though his foot's probably been agony all year, they say turf toe's horrible. And guys, it's cost them seasons. Like I said, I remember, was it like Des Bryant, like Julio Jones? They used to suffer with turf toe badly and they missed weeks and weeks on end and they said it was unbearable. So I can only imagine the uncomfortable situation Frank's had to play for him. And yeah, Jerry, we didn't want to need Jerry this year, but with Armani sucking, he had to go straight back in from injury. And the moment he was ready to go and fit, he fit in like a glove, didn't he? Like say, he just slotted back in and slugged it out. And yeah, the only other guy, like say, I'd add is probably Romeo. Like say, we saw such a small glimpse of him, but yeah, they've all done really well to say they've come off or dealt with pretty bad injuries. So we've been very lucky on the injury front this year. Like I said, they've all contributed.
What's Romeo's status now?
Romeo's healthy, as far as I can ascertain. He came back from his injury, he got a couple of sacks, and then he effectively got demoted because Houston took his snaps.
About to be cut.
I am fearing the worst for Romeo. I think he'll be coming back, but he's definitely on the list of possibilities for being cut.
What's the cap hit?
You save $6.5 million. And the total hits 12 and a half, so you take a dead cap hit of 6.
It's not enough. Who's that? It's not enough saving for me to get rid of him.
Who's that?
Romeo.
Nah, it's 7.5 and 14 million dead, isn't it? 7.5 million saving. 7 dead, 14 and a half off the bill.
Yes, correct. My bad. Right. Next award is one of the more fun ones. And that's the Most Improved Player Award. You must have been on the Lions to qualify. I don't care if you're on a previous team and then you elevated your play. This is the Lions developing talent. Vet or rookie. And the nominees for this one, this is the longest list so far, are Alex Anzalone, Jamal Williams, Khalif Raymond, Liam McNeil, Jared Goff, Derek Barnes, and Brock Wright. And I couldn't bring myself to cut it down because I think in their own right, all of those players have made a significant jump.
I think one's debatable. I know who my winner is. I won't say who my winner is, but one of those guys for me plays a crucial position. And like I say, in his rookie year, he was good, but this year he was a beast. Like I say, he plays on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah, it's a good group.
It's nice to have so many problems. I think that's the easiest thing to say about that. Some years, in previous years, we ain't had three.
I think I'm on the same page as you, Ryan, with my defensive choice.
I love Goff, but I don't think Goff deserves it. I think there are other guys out there who are younger and play a harder position.
God. You see the response I got on Twitter for this. Jesus. Woof.
Rookie player of the year now. And this one is going to be hard for some people hitting their stride early on in the year, some people hitting it late on in the year. And it will be interesting to see if recency bias hits with this. Nominees are James Houston, Kirby Joseph, Aiden Hutchinson, and Malcolm Rodriguez.
Cut and dry, this.
Absolute cut and dry. There is only one winner on that list.
There can only be one.
I think there's two, but I don't think we all have the same answer.
Yeah, I think there's two.
I see my smiles.
There can only be one. I think there can only be one.
I don't think it's any recency bias. Like I say, I feel like they've all just been, like I say, they've all just had their moment in the spotlight. I know who I'm picking, like I say, because
if I said positional value, wink, wink, you'd probably agree.
The chat are coming in with names, and I'm going to gloss over it, but it's interesting. Defensive player of the year. This one is difficult, I think. John Kaminsky, Aiden Hutchinson, Aleem McNeil, James Houston, Kirby Joseph.
It's not difficult. It really is. You're overthinking this, guys.
He's got to sell the awards night. Don't forget. We've got to make it seem competitive, Steve. Come on.
We've got lots of awards that are going to be close for. This one is not.
See, I've given players for this award and the previous award.
I don't.
No, I think me and Ryan are aligned on this. Mm-hmm. I think so. All right, moving it to the other side of the ball with the offensive player of the year. Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jamal Williams, Penei Sewell, Frank Ragnow, 5 deserving winners.
I mean, they're all kind of like, they're all crucial to one another, aren't they? one doesn't go without the other. So this is by far the hardest award, I think. All deserve equal merit.
I know my guy for this one. It's difficult, but I know him. I'm pretty confident with it as well.
Do you want to go for statistically the best quarterback we've had in the last 15 years? Statistically, it's debatable as to whether Stafford or Goff or whatever, but for in terms of the context of the offense, Goff is absolutely exceptional. Do you want to go for the guy who got 1,000 yards and is second best wide receiver in the NFL per PFF? Do you want to go with the guy who bit Barry's record? Do you want to go for Sewell, who's making plays in the passing game as well as absolutely laying people out, or Ragnow being the absolute warrior and leader that he is? Like, how do you choose? I like, this cannot be easy.
I'm going to take.
There's so many good, for me, so many good choices here.
Mal Williams last on my ballot, and that might upset everyone. I don't care about the touchdowns.
I'm picking my most elite player. That for me is what this is.
That's a very cryptic message.
I'm not even resigned to bring it back, Jamal, and I know how much that upsets people. I'm not 100% on it. Like I say, for me, it will come down to money. I don't have sentiment at that position.
But the final vote that's going to be determined by the panel, we come down to MVP. And this one may be a bit more cut and dry. Aiden Hutchinson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell, Jared Goff, Jamal Williams. Only one defensive player on there. It'll be interesting to see if anyone sways from where I think that one will go. Boys, is this one a bit more cut and dry than the last?
I know what the Twitter audience's opinion is.
Yes,
I got schooled on this one the other day. Jesus.
What's Twitter saying?
It was unanimous. Because I put Penei Sewell. I put Will Harris. Goff. Unanimously, almost unanimous. And it loads. I got about 30, 35 comments from it. I reckon 95% of them were Goff. That's what
my finger is just so not on the pulse of social media. Not for me. There's one standout for me.
Your finger's on Ryan turning him around for the camera and stuff like that, isn't it?
I'm actually going with PFF on this.
Oh dear.
Right.
I think for once PFF have got their numbers right on this guy.
Once.
Time to turn our attention to the two fan votes. This will be solely determined by you. A Google form will go up on Twitter. It will be open probably for the best part of a week until we go live this time next week on Monday to reveal the winner. The shortlist, which is not short, for the fan moment of the year is as follows. CJ Moore fake punt conversion against Minnesota. Jameson Williams' first touchdown. The Brock Wright 51-yard touchdown against the Jets to win the game. Hutchinson singing Billie Jean. Penei Sewell catch to ice the game against Minnesota. Hutchinson's interception against Chicago. And the fourth and one conversion against Green Bay to knock them out of the postseason.
God, I'm not picking this.
Some great moments in there.
It makes me so happy to read that list.
Awesome moment.
I mean, I love the Jamal Williams fight in Hard Knocks against the Colts linebacker. That was such a funny argument. It was so petty.
All right, final fan vote out there is going to be for the fans' player of the year. Now, it can be whatever you want it to be. There is no conditions on this vote. It isn't most valuable player. It isn't the Walter Payton man of the year. It's not the best offense or defensive player. It's whatever the hell you want it to be. Whatever is important to you. The five names that came back from our searching for a list of names from the public came back as follows, and it's quite similar actually to MVP. Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Aiden Hutchinson, James Houston, Jamal Williams. That is your list. The polls will go in the description of this video, and we will post reminders on Twitter about the vote, which is ongoing. You will decide that, and we will end the show with the fan votes. So we hope you tune in for those. Do you think the fans are going to go the way that you thought? And because I'm not sure if the 25, 30 or so people we found on Twitter to reply to us are necessarily representative of the Lions fans at large. I don't know. I think more people might be aligned with Steve's way of thinking, for example.
Let's put it this way. Are Michigan State fans going to vote for Aiden Hutchinson? Have they finally got off that high horse and got the chip off the shoulder? I highly doubt it.
I think they will. I don't know. That's why we're doing it. We'll see what they think.
We shall see. Right, that concludes the nominations, and we really hope that you tune in next week for the awards show. That's going to be our focus for the entire thing. We're going to go round the room. We'll all have our own awards that we're going to give out each. There will be some spiel if the guys want to come up with whatever they want to do, stats about the players, reminiscing about who they are, or if it's moments about that moment in particular, maybe watching it back or anything you like. But it's going to be a really fun day. Guys, some final thoughts on this season? Now we've gone through the nominations, maybe it stirred some memories or something like that. But final thoughts before we sign off on this one.
I've said what I need to.
What a team. What a fucking team. What a city. What a team.
We've had a lot of people eat their words this year. Like I say, they've really put a lot of people in the place. I've never seen so many people basically apologise for like writing a man off or saying a guy doesn't know what he's doing or his silly antics don't belong in football or being a meathead or a knucklehead or any other caveman derogatory term. Like I say, I feel like Dan Campbell is owed the biggest apology ever by a majority of the media, and he'll sleep well at the end of this season, I think.
And anyone that follows me on Twitter knows I've been keeping receipts, and there's been some checks cashed on Twitter in the last week, and I fucking loved it.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess one thing I would say is, you know, thank you to everyone who listens to us. This is the end of our third season already, which has come and gone like in the blink of an eye. So, yeah, it's been fun, and it's nice that we've been able to experience our first winning season together and have a lot more happy times than bad times. We can forget about 1-6. We just like archive those episodes and the stuff that goes with. So, yeah, just thank you to everyone who's joined us throughout this season. It's been great. You know, we just get more and more people, and we don't know why you watch us, but we really appreciate it.
We really do. As I said, next week is...
Who do you want to watch this? Like, come on. I've even got a mic now so you can hear my even more dulcet West Yorkshire tones. So I just need to be in HD next.
Yep, so next episode is the awards show. It's going to be a really fun one. Please, please do join us for that and get involved with the voting. We want to have as many people in that as possible. The show after that is going to be a look back at this 2022 draft class for Detroit and a review of how well Brad Holmes has done so far in the most recent season, but to date as well. So it's going to be a big show, that one too. So stay with us through this off-season. College football podcast this week is going to be focusing on the Senior Bowl. That is not too far away, and they are previewing that. So don't forget to check it out in the run-up to the draft, which is going to be a huge one for the Lions. Don't forget to follow us on our socials. It's Roar of the Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And the group for Lions fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. The website is rotluk.com. I'm going to make a big drive to try and get as much content on there as possible in the lead up to the draft. So go on there, submit the form, get subscribed, and have a look and see what we're doing on there. Just remains for me to thank my co-hosts, as always, to Ryan, Steve, and to all of you. Thank you so much for listening, for watching. We'll see you next time. Let's go, Lions One Pride.
9-8. Get in.